Okay. So tonight we're talking about the resurrection, which probably just about anything is about as unnatural as can happen, right? And that is sort of the proof that Jesus said who he was. It's been kind of, well, especially because I've been reading and thinking about kind of this subject, and then Sundays will be kind of really a follow-up of that, but talking, focusing more on all who he appeared to. But, that's our hope, that it was promised that that when he was buried, that he would raise up, and the evidence points towards that. But, as a naturalist, it's pretty hard. And there are a couple of things that really kind of says, well, if you really look at it, if you look at the witnesses, there's pretty good proof there that it's a very reasonable belief. And part of it, a key component, is that the tomb was empty. And that if you look even at the people who kind of argue, the Jews, the people who were there, that, they're not saying that the tomb was empty. They'll say, yeah, the tomb was empty. So Jesus' body went somewhere. And then the second component in there is, again, this whole timeline thing, is that Paul's statement there in 1 Corinthians 15, that Lee Strobel, who has really the majority of this material has come from, I just got rid of his plot and focused in on the facts. But he likes to use, and some of the people interviewing consider it, well, it's a creed, and we tend not to think well of the word creed. It's a teaching. And so Paul has that. And kind of the phraseology used there is an indication that it's very early that, that in his kind of giving this statement, that they heard this when it was teaching, when they were going around. And really, again, this whole gospel that he talks about, that's the critical component. We think of the gospel kind of as everything, right? But he focused, especially in his writing to these early Christians, as, this is the good news. And it is, right? I mean, yes, it's nice. He was born, worked miracles, and he showed that. But the reason we sit here tonight is that resurrection, is that part of the gospel, the good news. And so you then look and say, okay, it's the 50s, not our 50s, but the 50s AD, that was written. You look at when Paul was converted, 30s, okay? So a very few years. So you have testimony of Paul in the 50s to things that he knew in the 30s. So if I say, well, it's a myth, it's a legend. How can a myth or a legend occur in 3 to 8 years?
You can't.
You're right. That's not how myths and legends work. And so that whole set of arguments, tooth fairy, all of that business that the critics hit us with, or hit Christianity with, it doesn't hold up because of the timeline. So then, you say, okay, hey, you're naturalist, listen, I've got a supernatural here. And they got a few more arguments that we'll kind of go over some tonight, we'll go over more on Sunday. And, you say, well, a lot of them believe that. And just to give them a little slack, is what was the response of the Athenians when Paul started talking about the resurrection? Threw up their hands, right? Do we need to kind of go back to get that passage in memory there?
It says, not on God.
Well, yeah, he was talking about that, and they were with him, right, at that point, Chester. So, one second. They were with him there, but, let's see. Yeah, so we're in 17.
Because he was preaching Jesus in the resurrection?
Yeah.
That's 18.
17, 18. Well, they were teaching that, and they say, hey, we're going to hear what you're going to say. And so, but when he's preaching there, on the Ark of Pentecost, 32. And when they heard of the resurrection of the dead, some mocked, while others said, we will hear you again on this matter. So Paul departed. But when it hit that point, some of them said, hold on, no. There were naturalists, right? That didn't happen. They hadn't observed that. That didn't happen. And so that's where your hardcore naturalists have a hard time. Because the resurrection is in no way, shape, or form natural.
So you're saying, like in 32, mine says, so some began to sneer. Those were the ones that just couldn't believe that there was anything, there was ever anything of a resurrection.
He's a madman, yeah.
Okay.
You know, Paul, you're mad. You know, believing all of this stuff. The philosophy's gone through your head. So they were with him. They were listening to him. They were engaged. But when it hit that point, it went beyond what they were willing to accept. So, you know, again, just to realize that I tried not to beat up on naturalists, but that when you reach this point, this whole discussion here, I mean, they have a rough time with miracles, and very good. And C.S. Lewis said, you know, if you accept the miracles, you're in the supernatural, because that's kind of the definition there. So, you know, they have a hard time with miracles, and then, of course, the resurrection is miracle above kind of that. But those are things that are very hard for them. And, you know, what we've ended up coming, or, you know, I think what's very kind of clear in all of this is that their explanations, again, the swooning, the hallucinations, all these things that they come to try to explain still don't hold water. I mean, their best explanation is that it was a con. That they, you know, that, you know, the disciples, the apostles stole the body and then kind of made up all of this. But you then have problems with, well, they died for an untruth. They, and this was kind of an interesting, it's one of the problems when I'm preparing this stuff late, I start thinking about Sunday's lesson. But, you know, kind of a point kind of made there. They were transformed. There was a transformation in their life. I mean, when they stood before the Sanhedrin, are these the same guys? And then they said, hey, these men were fishermen. They were different. And so how can a lie lead to such transformation in who these men were? Fishermen for the most part. And so you then have to kind of figure that. You got to figure Paul. And here we come back around. That part of this exercise of the epistles and stuff is for us to look at the things that Paul says. And, you know, if you look at the percentages and stuff, it is the death, burial, and resurrection he talks about. That the other stuff that's in the four Gospels, he doesn't hit on that much. So, I mean, that's kind of where we're headed, hopefully. All right, so let's kind of catch up. We're working our way through here. I think where y'all were sitting, it seems pretty obvious to go that way. But have we picked up some things and discussed some things that you didn't really know that gives you even more confidence in your beliefs? You know, some of the things that we've kind of hit, because a lot of these things we talk about are just not things you think about on a daily basis. Yeah, right.
Yeah, but you mentioned the timeline.
Yeah.
I mean, not enough time. I never thought about that perspective before. That's been very helpful.
Good. Especially since that's been a theme of our center point.
But yeah. Do we have that anywhere that shows when Paul's, the whole timeline that shows when we think Paul's writing words and then when the Gospels were not?
Not in your lesson material. In the PowerPoints, which are up there with the particular lessons.
Okay.
I'm behind in a couple lessons. That's up. I did put a timeline in for a mini timeline, and I'll try to have a fuller kind of timeline there. All right. So what we're looking is to kind of look at what happened at the resurrection, follow the events to understand the claimed contradictions, and that's one of the things that we kind of get. And I have too lofty visions sometimes and too limited time. So kind of part of what I was going to do, and even if I put it together, we wouldn't then have time to go through the class. But what's kind of interesting, the whole issue with these contradictions, it's not within the single gospel. But it's like, I got four people, and at this point, the writers of the gospels seem very determined to kind of put their piece in of what they saw, what, you know, was remembered. And, well, I haven't really made a point, but we do realize that, you know, the main reason that we have high confidence in these is that Jesus told, you know, the apostles, the Holy Spirit's going to give you memory of these things, you know, so that you have that memory. So, again, it's a point that we can't use, or we don't want to, or not using for this subject, because, you know, that, again, miracle. And we're trying to show that just what we have, making an assumption that a naturalist makes, we're still there. There's still hold water. But the thing is, and you really, it was interesting kind of reading through and kind of the harmony stuff. You really see that each of the authors are sort of, you know, they focus, you know, on one people or certain people. They will say, you know, one will focus on one of the women of many. And so you have another that says many women. And so it's, oh, look at all this contradiction. Well, no. One witness has decided to focus on Mary Magdalene and not all the other women that are with her. And so what you have, or what is their issue, is contradiction between four witnesses. But the whole basic events all lay out. The core is all there.
No.
Okay. Looks like there was maybe one for
me. Thank you. I'm not a criminal justice expert, but I've heard them say many times that when all your witnesses absolute give every perfect detail, you know they've been tampered with.
Oh yeah.
So these are different details.
It is. And you gotta go at least one step further in that thought, because I mean somebody came first. It used to be everyone thought Matthew, now the general trend is Mark was first. And so Matthew and Luke says, hey, I've looked at other people's accounts. So you do have a little bit of tampering, or a little bit of whatever, but they bring out different details. And especially John. John really brings out, because it's been all of this time, you know, how many times they get hit with a question. I mean, we would have no clue of the timeline if it wasn't for John's gospel. John's gospel gives us the timeline of the 3 years. And you know that over that time, you know, if you put 60s for the others all being wrapped up, that for 30 years, John's been here. And now, how long was that? Or, you know, again, there were conversations being had, but still people would say, well, I read Luke, and I don't understand the timeline. How long was Jesus out there? And so John made that point. And again, John was kind of, his focus was Christians. So he's, you know, I think he was out answering a lot of questions that Christians had. But anyway, if I ever make it to the slide, there's some interesting things. Now, I asked y'all to remember, I gave you some homework. And this is not really accurate. To be really accurate, we should do verses. But it's quicker to do chapters. So, if you look at Matthew chapter 21, he starts the account. That last week starts. So, about almost 30% of Matthew is dealing with this last week. Mark, 38%. Luke is actually the low one at about 19%. And John is up there with Mark at about 40%. So, again, verses, if you really want to be accurate, you should do verses, but chapters are a lot quicker. Alright, so that gives you a feel. So, a large, again, the crucifixion, you know, kind of a hammer. Well, why, you know, didn't Paul talk more about the other stuff? Well, if you look, you know, especially John and Mark, very much focused on that last week. Alright, you know, we're really... you know, we kind of said, yeah, Jesus was killed, yeah, crucifixion was going on, but we didn't really, in this class, spend a lot of time on the crucifixion, because you say, yeah, Jesus existed, yeah, Jesus died. Most will admit, I mean, there's nothing unnatural about that. There's nothing supernatural. And, you know, what crucifixion was is that the way the body was hung, you naturally accept passive air, and, you know, breathe. That's, you don't think about it too often. But when you're hung on the cross, it's sort of set where you can't just naturally inhale. To be able to get a breath, you've got to lift up on that nail, or whatever support they've given you, push up, you know, the nail of the wrist kind of moving all around, generally thought to be put in a very painful location there. And so basically what happens is the person just is finally exhausted and can't lift up and dies from asphyxiation. Now, in general, and depending if they gave you a seat or not, you could live for days on this. So the fact that Jesus died so quick is a good feel for how much of a scourging he had. So, but anyway, that's kind of gives you a feel for how death occurred. And again, probably usually when you're going through this, one of the first ones that will kind of be presented is the swoon theory. That you can't, you know, Jesus wasn't really dead. Romans weren't really good at killing people at all. So, anyway, a spear, all of these things. And then, you know, there's body temperature, several things that would have gone on because Joseph of Arimathea, he had to go, you know, say, oh, okay, he's dead. He had to go to Pilate. So, you know, it was a little bit of time before the body came off the cross. Okay, so we now kind of go to, you know, the statement or kind of the question of, all right, you know, said, you know, as Jonah was 3 days and three nights, so I'll be, that's the sign I'm going to give. So he dies, generally what our thinking is, a Friday. Best indication of that, especially Sabbath, be on a Saturday. And so he dies, and then Sunday morning. So we kind of say, well, that doesn't seem like 3 days. And so some people really have some problems with that because they want to think 3 days our time. In other words, 24 hours times three, you know, times three. You know, you have to have that for it to be 3 days and three nights. And so they'll try to push that back, or they'll say that. But the Jews pretty much said, or the time thinking there, because again, they didn't have, you know, Fitbit, they didn't have the precision watches, did they?
No.
No. So it's pretty much, okay, 6 p.m., especially about this time of year, that's the start between day and night.
that actually at 6 p.m. is the next day. Okay? Is that kind of way. So that that here, this actually starts Saturday at 6 p.m. So, and they would count. Hey, you know, any part of a day, any part of a night would count. And you really want to get a feel for this because they also did this sort of things with years in a way, depending on which of the divided kingdoms. But, you know, part of the understanding the years of reigns and stuff is understanding the Jewish way. So you definitely, you know, have 3 days there. You have, he died at 3 p.m., so we have day one. 6 p.m. starts the next day, and so we have a night and a day there. And then 6 a.m. Would start day two, and then 6 a.m. would start the next day. And to our best understanding of the description, that Jesus was out of the tomb here. So we don't necessarily count 3 nights. So, you know, you kind of ask, okay, 3 days, 3 nights. So there's a couple of ways that you look at this, and we'll kind of hit one of the ways that people try to address that, but I think there's issues there. And then you kind of ask yourself, why are you concerned? You know, why be concerned about, you know, he said 3 days, 3 nights. All right? It's because we have a high trust in the witnesses, right? Or in the statements. You know, we see that from Paul kind of using it in several kind of cases there. Now, probably the best explanation I've seen is that, again, it's kind of a phrase. Like, how many is a few? So that, you know, kind of the 3 days, 3 nights, it's the concept of 3 days in the tomb. But, you know, I will admit, it bothered me some missing a night, even using the times there. But he came over, again, he raised. So there's a matter of an understanding, a term or something that that we don't have there. So the 24-hour stuff, I mean, that's very clear that that doesn't apply. Probably the best is that this is a way of saying, you know, kind of again, 3 days there. Because again, we get a little picky in some ways because we have watches and they had the sun. What some people will do is that they'll say that he went on the cross on Thursday. And, you know, there are kind of some interesting case there. But again, generally anyone who has any kind of understanding of Jewish culture and all of that pretty much shoot this down concept. And some of them go for it because they want the full 3 days and 3 nights, which I don't think is applicable for this clearly. So that's kind of some of the understanding explanation. Looking at your faces, I think I've managed to confuse you more. I'm afraid I've done. All right. So is anyone just really confused and want to ask a question?
I've always had problems with that, even from a child.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
Now, I guess with the Jewish culture, as you mentioned, they really understand how it works.
Right.
But to this day, I don't, because that's part of my understanding.
It is. How many of you think of 6 p.m. as the start of a new day?
I'm going to get 12 p.m.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's the way, I mean, so it is that kind of shift there. So it's like, you know, like some of the women went to buy spices and stuff after the Sabbath. You know, say, well, how can they do that and, you know, be at the tomb at, you know, at morning?
Well, I think the main,
well, it's because the, you know, the day, the Sabbath ended at 6 p.m.
the major problem we have, and I know I have, is the 24 hours.
Yeah.
That's the thing that it always before in my mind, because I say, well, a full day is 24 hours.
Yeah. So, but, and again, I think you can look, there were some examples that were given in at least the discussion, and you kind of go back to how they figured years, and you really start to realize they had a different timekeeping system. We're rolling. So, it would have been nice if John straightened out. He did some straightening, but it would have been nice if he had done a little more to help us get that away.
I really believe the reason why God has it like it is, it does not matter that part.
Yeah, yeah. And that, somehow that phrase, it just, it is, I mean, it is the time. And even, you know, now what I, again, I'm like you, I ponder this. And, you know, I've even thought, well, if you think about it, that what had gone on, you know, I mean, he went into trials that evening before. He spent that whole night. So, you know, we think in the tomb, in the grave, but, I mean, as soon as that all started, there was a path there.
Yes.
So that, maybe that's when the time started. But we don't have any evidence to that, so I can't say that for fact.
I don't know if I remember it correctly, but two questions. Is Good Friday, was that like created by the Catholic Church and then saying...
they're looking, but what you do is the day before the Sabbath. They're getting prepared for the Sabbath. Now, actually, the reason I put this up here was the reminder that... that when you did the Passover, that there was a Passover meal on the 14th. So we don't normally think of that, but I mean, that's what Jesus was doing with the apostles, was that start of the Passover meal, but it was the Sabbath. I mean, they would do that, and then again, you would have the Passover itself. And, you know, it was that one that clearly, you know, the priests didn't want people hanging on crosses dying on the Sabbath.
I guess my question was the advent of Good Friday, did that maybe, was that a source of confusion or just unrelated?
Well, for those who are very much into considering that as, you know, the authority of the church saying that was the day, yeah, this whole discussion would have issues on it, you know, being the day over. And again, it could be. There's actually a kind of a day off there, but I think it's probably the best to think of it as a phrase there. And then actually, it was kind of when we did the Jonah prophet, it's kind of interesting the description that's given in Jonah and the wells and things like that. So we had an interesting discussion. Did the big wet fish, you know, stay on the surface for a while before he went down to the depths and stuff?
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention. There's no frame of reference for Jonah's 3 days.
No.
Here we have a frame of reference that we're stumbling over.
Yeah. It is, again, if someone brings that up, it's a good question to bring up. But the most likely answer is, again, it's a phrase, it's a terminology, it's like a few, a little bit, and then again, our way of time, in fact, we have watches and have things down to seconds and milliseconds and microseconds if you're a swimmer or whatever, we kind of get thrown a little bit by this. Okay, and I've probably spent more time than I should. Okay, yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, but it seems like usually when, like, a number is given, it is specific, right? If details are given, you would think that they were important or for
yeah.
a reason. So,
and that's the reason a lot of us, I mean, Joel, I mean, I'm there with Joel, that I would gladly like to find a good explanation for that. And I guess I am most comfortable, although I've never read any scholar, you know, make this, is that, you know, maybe some of the things going on the Thursday that
I mean, he was on the path to death. And so, you know, if you just count, rather than he's not dead, he's not in the tomb, but all of those. But again, that's just me, just as Joel, trying to work through and see if I can pick up a knife.
I've heard before that oftentimes in Jewish tradition, the numbers 47 and 3 were often used figuratively. Like, for example, Peter asking about how many times should I forgive someone, 7 times, like Jesus says. Not just 7, but, you know.
So the 7 times 7. So not, it wasn't, some of it was symbolic. There was some symbolism in that. All right.
Look at, like, Matthew 17:23, where Jesus is explaining that he will die. Says they will kill him and raise on the third day. That essentially means he's going to be dead a full 3 days.
Yeah.
Which just means the third day after he dies.
Yeah.
And technically, what you explained kind of matches that.
Yeah.
Based on how they kept track of the beginnings of when the next day started.
Yeah. And that's where, actually, I mean, we are probably a little bit off track because we really are looking at it in Jewish time. But potentially some of the critics who kind of bring that all up are on a 24-hour day. And then you're saying, wow, he's not anywhere close to the third day.
Well, you can get the 3 days, but it's 3 nights, right?
That's right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was the third day.
You can get 3 days, but how do you come up with 3 nights?
That's right. So it's us saying, because, you know, he quotes back, and so potentially the phrase, and, you know, it was the third day. Alright, so now I started this, and boy, did I totally I think Marty used the term optimistic. I was way over optimistic that I pulled these together, so I don't really have this. I may not get it done before this class, but what was really helpful, I saw someone do it much simpler, so but I had to get a little flashy, is that when we think about the resurrection, okay, that, you know, here is Jerusalem, the cross is in a quarry, and actually when you look at this rock, it's really bad rock, so you would never use it for stone, and again, 3 p.m., so Joseph had to get to Pilate. Pilate got the centurion to confirm that Jesus was dead. And Jesus had to be in the ground, or he was trying to get in the ground, before 6 p.m. Although, I think, touching the dead body and stuff, I mean, Joseph was already knocked out as far as participating in the Passover on the Sabbath, on that Sabbath. There's the tomb. So, Joseph... it was a new cut tomb. And so, and close there. Now, some of you may ask, okay, you know, first of all, okay, you have a place where they punish people. Why in the world would you have a tomb within 160 feet or 140 feet? 140 feet. Anyone here want to be buried 140 feet from where they kill people? That's just not your choice there. Okay. So what's interesting is that there's this British dude who just really bothered him that the tomb was inside the city walls and this stuff. He wouldn't really accept that walls move after 1,800 years and stuff. And so there was another location that had a nice tomb, although it was a First Temple tomb, and really had this really cool rock face, and said that was chopped off of the place of the skull, that rock and stuff. 1,800 years, the rock looks exactly the same, destructions, all those things. So anyway, he said that's where it is. And what's interesting, to give this illustration, is about 140 feet from this nice little garden, and actually, well, there, the Golgotha there, oh, it's not even 50 feet, 60 feet. But then just on the other side is this huge bust. station. All buses coming home, you go to the garden, you hear these buses back and forth. So again, this is a very tight spot. So, and look, I mean, the tomb is right there. I mean, I'm right under the walls of Jerusalem. So yeah, I'm willing to have a tomb 160 feet from where they kill people. So anyway, and it's fulfilling a prophecy, right? A rich man's tomb never used. Now, what would happen is that they would cut through the rocks, and they kind of would do, you know, a first place and stuff, depending if you already had a big family. But really then, as more people died or was getting ready to die, they would keep carving out. So this is actually National Geographic. The real Jesus did a nice job on this. And my understanding is that you can't tell that it's a tomb anymore, but this is basically under church building now, is kind of the layout. And also very important is kind of that layout, because you got to think, okay, they looked down and saw the body was missing. So when you're looking at the resurrection and the events kind of figuring this all out, is some of the folks were at Bethany. So some of the women, Mary Magdalene. So if I'm over here in Bethany, which is a couple of miles from where the tomb over here is, Golgotha, it's going to take a little time to get there. So if I want to be there at sunrise, when am I going to leave the house? Very early. It's going to be dark. So, you know, what, when these folks are giving the account, you know, some of them start, well, you know, the lady started at dark. Now, it doesn't say started. It just says, you know, they were, you know, at dark. So, it's just, these are some things that you got to realize. So, anyway, you've got Bethany, you've got the tomb, most likely Peter, some of the guys were here at where the last, you know, supper, the upper room, was at. So that would be over this way. So you've got people here, you've got people here, and you've got people coming here. Okay. Okay. So this is kind of another view on, and at least here they show it as a fairly new, but they already have some of the places where they put them. And what they would do is you put the body there, it rots for a year, and then you come back and you gather up the bones and you put it in at this time in this nice little ossuary. In the times of David and all, they would have a pit underneath of that, and they would put the bones under there. So again, our tomb. So this is the only part I got started with. So I got started with Joseph of Arimathea. Thank you. So anyway, it was evening had come, preparation day, the day before the Sabbath. Joseph, kind of giving that whole description. He brought fine linen, took him down, wrapped him in the linen, and he laid him in a tomb which had been hewn out of the rock, and rolled a stone against the door of the tomb. And Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, observed where he was laid. So, let's see. This was much bigger. Here they are. So, again, plenty of places for them to look and observe where the body was. So there's a body here in the tomb. So Joseph Arimathea there, he had to go to Pilate and then kind of come back and do this. So I think actually this even serves better. This is kind of one of the harmony books. And kind of doing, so this is the harmony for Matthew and Luke on this side. And then you have Mark kind of here. And so, you know, it's like some give a little more detail, some give a little less detail, but they're all kind of following the account, right? We had time to go through this, but I'm kind of on a short time. But anyway, you have here that is kind of fill in. You then add John. John says a lot more, doesn't he? that, you know, there is three of the Gospels, and then John comes in. So, you know, the high day Sabbath, the Jews said, hey, you know, it's the first Sabbath of the start of the 40 days for Passover. You know, they came, they broke. So all of these details about breaking the bones, you know, we kind of come back here, and at least at this point, in these verses, they're not there. You know, given. And then, you know, he brings in Nicodemus. So, you know, where some of these, you know, the conflict stuff comes in, they'll say, oh, here, the others don't mention Nicodemus at all. So they're in conflict. Well, no. There's a witness, and in this case, you have a witness who's heard, definitely everybody's, dealt at least 30 years minimum of listening to people ask him questions. And so, you know, that information is then included. So, just some of the kind of contradictions. Number of women. Luke had five. Okay? But what is significant about Luke? We shouldn't be surprised Luke has five, right?
Very detailed.
Very detailed. Plus, there's really strong indications. He talked to Mary. He talked to these women. He got information from them. So he kind of knew, okay, it wasn't, you know, the two, the three, that's the ones I just mentioned. They just didn't mention all five. They didn't mention all of the women.
Using women as a witness was so different than getting them in the first place.
You know, if they were making this stuff up, that's one of the problems with the theory that they were a bunch of liars, is that they would not use women as the witnesses at that time. And then, like here, okay, well, this is kind of a location, but like they'll argue, the ascension. Where was the ascension? Well, you read Matthew, and Matthew gives, you know, says they're in Galilee, he gives the Great Commission. He doesn't even mention the ascension. But, you know, some will say, oh, well, the Great Commission is given at the ascension so that the Gospels can't agree on where the ascension occurred. You know, was it Galilee? Was it Mount of Olives in Jerusalem? But you look, it's not Matthew disagreeing with Matthew. It's Matthew only having certain parts of information and the others having a different, kind of going on a little bit farther there. So, time, it would take me half a class to go through that. But when you look and kind of go through this exercise of adding verses, you realize they're just putting different details. They're coming with another piece of information. They're not contradicting each other. They either telescope, said, I'm not going to mention all five women. I'll mention one or two that are the main people. And so they only mention a couple of women. They don't mention all of the women. And so that's kind of the nature of these contradictions.
One illustration I always like to give, if you're witnessing, if I can use a bank robbery, some of the witnesses are in the bank, some are outside looking at the window, some of them might be in the office. Each one has a different slightly perspective. Again, you interview these witnesses, their story's not going to be perfect. And in fact, if it was, something went wrong.
Exactly.
Some of them's going to give more detail about what the guy was doing, some of them look in the window and have different details about different aspects of it.
And, you know, I was debating between using the case for Christ and the cold case stuff. And it's just the case for Christ just gives a nice broader, gives the full kind of picture. But, you know, some of this material and stuff has been coming from that. And that's kind of, you know, his whole point there, that, you know, he gives an example of a witness. I debated on trying to mimic that for that class, but I figured I was doomed anyway to finish it. No reason to add more complexity. Okay, so I'm not sure how we're going to do this, but Lee's already left. So anyway, we have Corinthians on Sunday, and then the Philippians people, we're not going to really have time, but we may try. We really rush y'all. So if there's something that you really wanted to say about Philippians, Sunday's your chance to get that in. If there's any more you want to say.
Yeah.
she covered it quite thoroughly.
Okay. All right then. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dad.
All right.